Welcome to the Transition Podcast. Today, we're really excited to have another special guest, another very good friend of ours, who's joining on the line from Cornwall, Robin Mitchell, or Robbie Mitch, depending on which alias you're using. Great to have you with us. Thanks for joining.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, welcome to the podcast, Robin. It's great to have you with us. So you've been a session musician with us for a number of years, and we've really enjoyed having you as part of the musical setup of Transition. We've toured to lots of different countries around the world together, and today we want to talk about Taiwan. But just first, I wonder, could you share with us some of the other musical endeavours you're involved in?
I've done lots of solo stuff. I've done kind of acoustic songwriter work. I've done kind of electronic music and production and played with a band a lot as well. And then I've played with other people's projects, as you may know. But yeah, I think for me, music has been this way of like self-expression, of kind of sharing stuff that's going on inside me and things that I see going on in the world. It's been a great way to connect and meet people. I also really enjoy putting on gigs, so I got to do a lot of that in Bristol, where I used to live, and now in Cornwall, I've done a bit of that as well. And yeah, playing with other musicians, whether it's in a band or jamming.
Yeah, we've really enjoyed jamming with you. Can you tell us more about some of the promotions that you've been involved in too?
My main thing when I was in Bristol was putting on gigs in a laundrette or just using weird, quirky spaces. So,
well, that actually, it became quite famous around Bristol, actually. Certainly talking to people who know anything about the music scene in Bristol, the Live at the Laundrette series that you launched, actually, it kind of became quite legendary. It was
funny. It was definitely a cult following, that kind of thing. And I think it really hit where Bristol was at the time. My friends who ran the laundrette, the Grist family, Cassie, Ellen and Lily, they had a really cool thing going on, just real sense of community and quite, you know, literally it was a laundrette, but you could also get a good coffee there, use the internet, really popular with visitors to Bristol, like backpackers, but also a real community space for people who live nearby. So I think then the live music nights kind of fed into that as well and created a real sense of community, and we kind of encouraged people to like get to know each other. And so, yeah, did that for probably 10 years and it was really lovely. But sadly, they closed their doors in spring.
It sounds like it's done such a lot of good. Did you ever spin up the washing machines for any of the gigs?
A couple of times. We had touring artists. We had someone come and wash their trousers and play in their pyjamas. Yeah, so obviously not while the gig was going on, because it would be quite noisy, but before and after, they were very good to us.
And and yourself, I guess, is it fair to say that you've been doing music ever since your school days, I guess, through university and then on, using various different aliases? So I don't know whether, would you like to maybe give us a quick rundown of some of the different aliases that you've used?
Oh my gosh. Yeah, so I think I started playing guitar again when I was 14. So I'd had a few lessons when I was much younger, but didn't really like it. And then I got into music as a teenager, picked up the guitar at 14, wrote my first songs quite soon after that. And then was kind of self-recording and like just hand-making CDs and tapes and like giving them out to friends and family pretty much from that point onwards. So I did a lot of stuff under my own name. When I went to uni, I started a folk band with my friend Tom, which was called Bird and Bear. And we did some gigs in the sort of Falmouth area and recorded a couple of things. And then I moved back to Bristol and started like a rock band called Absent Me with my brother Pez and a couple of really good friends. And that was, you know, for me, that was a really good experience. We also had a really fun time gigging and playing together. And so that was, and then around kind of midway through doing that, I started self-releasing music again, but using, as well as the sort of acoustic folky stuff, I started this like indie pop project, which was a bit more synth and electronic based as well, and putting on gigs for that. And that was called Featherweight Soul. And again, doing that around Bristol, but also in France and Germany and different places, played in Taiwan as well a couple of times.
I was going to say, interestingly, Featherweight Soul, one of the features of it was that you produced cassettes, didn't you? Which actually was kind of ahead of its time, because then cassettes had a real comeback around that era. And wasn't it even, there was even a Taiwanese TV channel that came to Bristol and interviewed you about it.
Yeah, you're right. I'd forgotten about that. I think I always had a Walkman growing up to listen to tapes. And when I was at university, I still had my Walkman with me. And I would sometimes make a mixtape and just walk around. Like, I just found the sort of the wobble and the warble of the tape. And I found that really comforting. So then I decided to start recording music and putting it out on tape. And around that time. And like the first tape I did actually did quite well. So I made 25 of them and sold all 25 and had people in Japan,
wow,
and the USA, France and Germany buying these through Bandcamp, through my shop there.
Yep.
And then the next time I made a tape, I made another 25 and I think I sold about three. But it's I think people kind of come to and at gigs, they'll pick it up and look at it. And even if it's amazing how many people do still want to buy a tape, because they have a tape player in their car or they just think it looks nice. But yeah, even if they don't buy it, it kind of gives them something to look at and connect with. And I guess it's a talking point. You know, people like to come and chat to you after the gig, but they don't always know what to say.
Absolutely. And I tell you what, the cassettes are amazing. Mention your Bandcamp for everybody who would like to hear more. We will play a couple of songs on this podcast so people can get a taster. But while we're on the subject, let us know.
Yeah, so Bandcamp, if you don't know, is just a really good independent music retailer where you can stream songs and also buy merch straight from the artist. So it's really well set up. And my Bandcamp is robimitch, R-O-B-I-M-I-T-C-H, .bandcamp.com. And I've got some tapes on there and some records and some CDs.
It's great. We'll get everyone to check it out.
Yes, please.
Brilliant. Well, as you know, this series is looking at people's experiences in Taiwan, but we really want to share, I suppose, impressions that aren't just what's in the news at the moment. This is about entertainment, and it's about people, and it's about the stories that are shaping lives. And so we know that you've had some incredible experiences in Taiwan. We'd love to ask you, when was the first time you went, and what things struck you when you first got there?
Oh, guys, I can already tell that I'm going to get a bit, maybe even a bit emotional. So many good memories.
Oh, wow. We love that.
So I think the first time I went to Taiwan was 2013. And I got the plane with, I think, both of you. And I remember Jesse had the ukulele in the bag and we were sort of singing songs as we were going through Heathrow Airport. And that kind of really set the tone for this, like, quite joyful, sunny trip. And so we landed in the north, but we got the train straight down to Kaohsiung. So the first place I got out in Taiwan really was Kaohsiung. And it was really nice and sunny, but really hot.
Amazing.
And we were staying in Idar World, weren't we? Do you remember that?
That's right, yeah.
It did feel very tropical. And for me, like, tropical islands is kind of my childhood dream. Like, I always just wanted to go and hang out in these kinds of warm, humid, green spaces. And so landing in like southern Taiwan, and I was just buzzing. I think I was really, really excited.
Yeah,
that's right. It was funny, wasn't it? It was like a global leadership summit, and so we'd been invited to go and perform as part of their grand finale. So it was actually fascinating that there was, you know, young people from I think 50 something countries there, or maybe even more, as well as all the local Taiwanese hosts and volunteers and helpers and things.
It was really diverse, which again was really fun. There's kind of, I guess that global leadership summit has felt like a really hopeful or kind of optimistic thing, you know, lots of just kind of enthusiastic, positive people from all different parts of the world coming together and celebrating and partying.
That's right.
If I remember. I think I remember just we were staying in a hotel, which was kind of in this almost like a shopping mall or some kind of strip. And even that sort of sense of Taiwan is this, you've got the sort of jungly, tropical-y thing going and the coastal thing. But then you've got this very developed, like really smart shopping malls and and just seeing all the like go-karting and crazy golf and obviously a place where people like to have a good time.
Yeah, it's interesting you pick out that that kind of very stark divide between the urban and the, I don't know if you call it rural or at least, you know, nature, which are right side by side. But again, like you say, there is a very stark divide, isn't there, between the kind of densely populated urban space, which might be right next to a mountain or a beach or a river or whatever. In terms of, are there any specific quirky memories you've got of those first few days there where you thought, I've never experienced this before?
So, I mean, getting the high-speed train down to Kaohsiung was, that was a bit of a thrill. I think we were cutting it fine.
That's right, we had to catch the last train that night, which if we missed it, we would have
stuck.
Got a bit stuck. So thankfully the flight wasn't delayed.
And even just that experience, I think I had some Pekari sweat for the first time on the train, maybe. Something like that the trolley. Got hooked on that. And yeah, so all the snacks and drinks, just completely different, like different flavours, different textures. Lots of kind of things that are salty that you wouldn't expect to be salty, or things that are kind of tangy.
Give us some examples.
I mean, for Pekari sweat, you know, you're drinking this drink, but it's like, it's kind of like an energy drink, but it's got this sort of, I don't know. How would you describe it?
Isotonic sports drink, but without all the sugar of.
But what does it taste like?
Salt.
It's like
soap.
Yeah, but it's not like drinking the sea, is it? It's not like, you know, when you get seawater in your mouth and it's like, oh, horrible. Whereas this is, it's moorish.
It's almost a little bit lemony in
some
ways.
Yeah, a bit citrusy.
Yeah, okay.
I agree. It's the kind of drink which, on a really hot day when you are sweating, you feel really refreshed by. But if you try and drink it on a cold day, you're a bit like, oh, this is not what I need.
Yeah.
It's funny.
I think it is. But yeah, that's just, I mean, I'm saying that because that's one of the things I can remember. But I feel like there were so many sort of drinks and snacks. And I think like very early on, we went out for some dumplings for lunch. And again, like for me, this is all a brave new world of cuisine that I just hadn't really grown up with. And I think in the UK, like East Asian food it was definitely around a bit in London in particular, but it hadn't really made its way. Like now it's so much more in people's kind of consciousness and much more widely spread. So for me, I was having all this stuff for the first time. But yeah, dumplings made a big impression early on.
And was that one of your first time using chopsticks as
I was a novice at chopsticks. And I remember I was very nervous actually about that and a bit embarrassed. But I think it was a classic example of going in at the deep end and having to learn to swim. And also not wanting, you know, someone came along with a knife and fork or like a fork and spoon. It's like, no, you know, don't patronise me.
So you had a good never give up attitude.
I think that's
the way you learn, though, isn't it? If you put yourself in that position.
Yeah, there's definitely pride is on the line as well.
Can you remember which kind of dumplings they were that you enjoyed so much?
So the first place that I can remember having dumplings was when we went out for lunch with a friend of yours who wrote some of the lyrics.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, my friend Peggy and her husband Wallace, who lived in Kaohsiung at the time, having been in Bristol. So that was a really nice connection. And they took us out, didn't they, for some really good food and some to check out some of the local kind of Kaohsiung specialities.
Yeah.
So
I can picture the setting, and I just remember it was just I think that was again probably my first experience of Taiwanese hospitality, where people just want to take you out, they really want to treat you, they're like making sure you get the best things from the menu, that kind of experience, which just happened all the time.
Amazing. In terms of the performance then, what's the difference in like performance, that music festival, the first one that we played at, how did you find it?
Yeah, so it was cool. It was a cool stage. I remember. So another fun thing about this was teaming up with Farida Guitars and sorting us out with guitars for the gig. And I think in audiences in Taiwan, it's probably just a completely different starting point. I think in the UK, you know, if you grow up in a certain scene, it might be like, oh, you're into pop music or rock music or rap or whatever. Yeah. And I feel like in Taiwan, maybe they're just starting from a completely different place. And there's not, it just felt like people were really engaged, really positive. I mean, like for me, it was the first time playing with backing tracks, which was kind of a new experience as well. And I think something that has become a lot more common in the UK now. But at the time, it was still sort of quite a new thing. And so to kind of be doing that, but playing rock music, it was like this kind of, again, meeting of worlds, which... Yeah, it felt really unique, and like seeing that it really energized people and they were really positive about it was great.
When you grew up, did you feel like backing tracks was a cheat?
Oh, definitely, yeah.
It's funny, isn't it? I thought we spend so much time recording hundreds of individual layers inside one song. And actually, it's really nice to be able to play some of those layers along with us live.
Mm.
You say if it's just three of us, we go on a trip to Asia somewhere. If you haven't got other session musicians you can have to be able to just put those sounds in, it feels really good. But yeah, when I was young, I thought that's completely cheating.
Yeah, and I think the setting is kind of key as well, right, isn't it? Almost like the bigger the stage, the more it calls for like having different things in the arrangement. And it's also about who you can get. Like, if you can get a band of 15 musicians and pay them all, like, get them all in the same place at the same time.
Yeah, that's true.
So I think there's something pragmatic. But for me, I think definitely when I grew up, I was much more like a purist, if that's the right word, or kind of thought everything should be done live. And then I think part of working with you guys probably shifted my perspective on that, and my own experiences of just trying to do music in different places and different setups, and you don't always know what the PA is going to be like.
Crazy.
That's kind of it's like you said, Jesse, it's about what you're trying to bring from the track into the live setting. I think there's something lovely when you can see what you're hearing being played, and I think that's really unique, and like I hope we never lose that in music. But I think there's also, you know, there's so many kind of different ways you can add to that that I don't think is cheating at all. I think it's just about kind of creating the performance that's best for your audience in the right space. Yeah.
Was there a point where you felt like after some trips there that you were hitting the ground running, you knew what to expect, and you were kind of deeper into the culture?
What was really nice about my visits to Taiwan was that they were always for quite a few weeks. I think like sort of 3 to 6 weeks.
Yeah, it's a good amount of time.
And spending, you know, being based in a neighborhood. Mm. And so one of the first times we were in Nehu, good old Nehu.
Yes.
in Taipei. And so get just kind of being a bit independent, getting around, like when Josh would like trust me to go off on my own and explore a bit. Just getting to know the neighborhood spots, like where's good for breakfast, where's good for coffee. Is it a dambing? Is that what the breakfast?
Superb. Yes.
Pancake? Yeah, that's right. Having dambing for breakfast.
Love dambing.
That was quite a nice tradition, wasn't it? Having the bacon and cheese dambing. That was really good.
And I think what I loved about being in the suburbs, when I stayed with Josh, because the other time was that on the line out to Danshui, I can't remember what it's called.
Yeah, on the red line. One time you stayed with us at Mingde.
Yeah.
That's right.
And I think both, like in Nehu as well, you can see the mountains and you can almost like walk to them, can't you? And or this sense of like being in the city, but also with the mountains nearby and the parks. And like I love that. I'd sometimes take myself on a little walk up the mountains, try and see some monkeys or something like
that. Yeah, I remember sending you off on a mountain walk once, hoping that you'd come back. And thankfully you did.
I absolutely loved it. And you get amazing views over the city. That sort of thing, being a bit more independent and, or at least just being there long enough to get a feel for the neighborhoods and the train lines and just like, I mean, such a huge part of life there is the food and drink, isn't it? Like 24/7, 365. So much.
Absolutely. Yeah. Whenever you meet someone Taiwanese, they're always going to be saying, you know, let's go and eat something, drink something. Have you eaten yet? Come on, I'll introduce something to you to eat. So
yeah,
like you say, food and drink
it's the greeting, isn't it? Like I can't remember how you say it, but have you eaten? How are you doing?
yeah, that's right. Have you had food yet? Yeah. So your introduction into Taiwan was very much through transition, but I know you kind of entered into the music scene there a little bit yourself as well. So I don't know whether you want to talk a little bit about how you kind of started to discover Taiwanese music and how actually you also perform there and have been in touch with and work with some other Taiwanese musicians or producers.
Yeah, it's really, really cool going on that journey of discovery. So I think my approach has always been to get music recommendations for the places I visit and the friends I meet, just to hear what people are into. I love finding new music. And so hanging out with you guys, you were talking about these Taiwanese bands and I'd go away and research them and listen to them and got to meet some of them in person as well, which was really cool. And actually, Josh, you were bringing people over to Glastonbury Festival and we were linking up there as well.
Stuff. Yeah, that's right. Actually, that was great then because I remember an artist, Su Ming, indigenous artist from Taiwan, who came, and you managed to get an extra acoustic slot for him in one of the tents there in Glastonbury, which was brilliant.
Ah, it was so good. Love Su Ming. Love his music. And that was a lovely... But he got us all dancing and like doing this sort of conga line.
That's
and
great.
Yeah. Kind of starting to do this research and then hearing about producers that you'd worked with as well, particularly Uchain, and checking out their music and just finding it really exciting and like to see, as well as like Taiwan's got a big pop scene, but there's this really cool indie scene as well. I remember going into White Rabbit Records and some of the different record shops and Josh taking me to some gigs as well. So it was really lovely to then be able to go and play a few times. Played at, was it Riverside?
Yeah, that's right. The small Riverside, which is historic because it's, I think last month has finally shut down.
Oh, no.
So they've got the bigger venue, but they've shut the smaller one down. And there was like a big finale for it because, you know, it's part of the music history of Taiwan. So to be able to say that you played at the small Riverside is quite a thing now. Yeah.
Oh, it's a lovely, that was such a lovely gig. And Josh came and played drums for me, which is very kind of him. It was like a full house. The two bands that were playing as well were amazing, really like fun and engaging. And but yeah, I think then as well as that, did a few kind of cafe gigs around and our friend Ryan played at his bar. For me, definitely a highlight was going to record with Uchain Wang in Rooftop Studios. But yeah, I think I'd heard a lot about Uchain and then met him a couple of times, and then just through browsing the internet, listening to different bands, I stumbled upon this Taiwanese band Sunset Roller Coaster, who just released an EP, the Jinji Kiku EP, which just like really, really hit the spot with me musically. It was still one of my favorite like releases, really, to be honest. It's just four tracks or even three tracks, but just really, really nice. A kind of mixture of like retro and modern, a bit of like little bits of Motown, little bits of like 80s synth stuff going on, and then just a really nice like Taiwanese take on all that.
Yeah.
And so going into the studio where that was recorded and with the producer who recorded it and getting to work on some of my own stuff as well was a real highlight. And because Uchain's basically just a musical genius and a technical genius, and but also a lovely person, and it was that was really rich.
So maybe you can recommend a song for the listeners that you recorded with Uchain in Taiwan then.
Yeah, great. So Distant Sun, which started as a demo, which I did in my bedroom, and then like I showed a few demos to Uchain, and that was the one that we picked. And so that was all done at Rooftop, and then I think it's got... I used to record voice notes on my phone all the time of people teaching me how to say things properly in Mandarin. So the opening line is one of my voice notes as well.
Very good.
我去外面. I'm going outside.
Am I a distant sun to you? Not giving much. You are a distant sun to me. You are the light by which I see. But I barely feel your touch. No, no.
I remember listening to the quality of the instruments that you recorded. Each of the tracks has got such a lot of character to it.
You were talking about layers, Jesse. We layered so many things in this. It's like kind of each note was played by a different instrument,
so, and
like different guitars, different mics for the voices, and then all these lovely like vintage synthesizers. I was in heaven, honestly.
Brilliant. And Robin, you mentioned Sunset Roller Coaster, probably, you know, one of Taiwan's biggest exports musically. But but then you actually supported them in Bristol, didn't you? Which is a really nice connection.
Amazing exchange.
You know, a brilliant kind of crossover.
Yeah, that was a bit of a dream come true as well, because I'm a huge fan of that band, and to be able to play a show with them in my hometown was really special. And it was at the Exchange in Bristol, which is not a huge venue, but it was packed, and a really nice mixture of like lots of, obviously, like Mandarin speakers, I think Taiwanese and maybe like East Asian students, and but then also lots of British people. And yeah, I got to play with my band, but they were really lovely, really friendly, really welcoming, and also just their set was killer.
Oh, that's great.
They're very, very good musicians, those guys.
And we saw them a few years later then, actually, and they still remembered you. Yeah, they were asking after you.
Great. So
it's a really nice, nice musical connection. Yeah. I think there is something that lasts, isn't there, when you have that universal language of music that you, when you connect with someone in that way, it really creates something special.
Yeah, if they need a support act again, anytime, anywhere, they can call me. Let them know. I'll be there with my backing tracks.
Yes, yes. And the drum machines.
Yeah, you got it.
So I think that's great. And maybe, Robin, if you could tell us what you're up to at the moment, and if there's any specific stuff for people to be looking out for that you're doing online.
So, since the pandemic, it's been a funny little time for me. I moved from Bristol, where I'd always lived, down to Cornwall, which, if you don't know the UK, it's like as far away from anywhere as you can.
Beautiful place to be.
And it's very beautiful, really nice. But yeah, it's quite different. There's a really nice music scene down here, which is awesome. But it just changes things a bit.
Yeah.
So yeah, I put out some music this summer, actually, but I didn't release it through a label. I didn't really promote it at all. I just put it on YouTube. And it was some early songs that I've re-recorded in just a kind of intentionally quite a low-key way. So I do have some new music, which is on the internet. I've got a couple of songs, which I will be releasing later this year as well. And I'm just trying to get things in place for that. I'm quite excited about them. They're a slightly different sound, as you guys know well. Deciding how to release the music, how to get it to as many people as possible in the right way. It's a full-time job into itself, isn't
yes,
it?
Yes,
absolutely. Great. Well, for these new releases, is your Bandcamp the best place for people to go? Or
when they're out, they'll be everywhere. They'll be, so if you check out my artist page on Spotify, Apple Music, YouTube, Bandcamp. Like, I mean, I'm a big fan of Bandcamp because it's very artist-friendly.
Great.
But whatever works best for you.
And are there any songs that were directly inspired by experiences in Taiwan?
Yeah, definitely. So the first one that springs to mind is a song called Golden Hour, which, you know, when you're writing a song, it kind of comes together. It tends to come together over a period of time and not necessarily all in one place. But a key, I guess, like time for me with shaping this song was being in Taiwan, staying with Kenny and Linda. In their lovely apartment with Jesse. And I had my laptop with me and I was doing bits of recording. And the song is about kind of, I guess it's like talking about feeling on top of the world and being in this kind of city environment and feeling like you're kind of walking on air. And my friend Francis cut together a video, which is all the iPhone footage that I took when we were touring around.
Oh, cool.
And a lot of it is from a taxi ride that me and Jesse took to the airport one day. And it was this beautiful, sunny evening, completely blue skies and just sunset. And the taxi driver was very chatty, very friendly. And you guys were having a good chinwag. And I was just filming out the window. And it's all this kind of, you're going on the overpass and all these high-rise buildings and then like mountains as well. And I think for me, sort of when you're traveling around a lot, touring, doing music and then traveling around the city, and you're like listening to music in your headphones and looking out, that for me is like a really, really special place and memory. So Golden Hour is all kind of trying to pull all that together. So that's on YouTube as well. Right.
Like I'm shining with the glory of the sun, floating suspended above the city where I'm from. Feels like I'm drifting on a tidal wave of love. I was wasted, I was washed out. Now I've been lifted up. Oh my God.
Was there anything awkward that happened to Taiwan that you kind of remember?
Anything awkward? Probably loads of awkward things. I think, obviously, you just remember the good stuff, don't you?
That's a good thing.
Do you mean like cultural misunderstandings, or do you mean like just me being awkward?
I don't mean anything like particularly negative.
There's a time when you made me sing Christmas songs.
Oh, really?
And wear a Santa hat. Yeah.
Is that one of our concerts there? Oh, Robin, I'm sorry we scarred you.
That was at the CKS Memorial.
Oh, yes. Yeah. What event?
And I can't remember what the song was, though. Might have been like.
Is it White Christmas or something? Or...
Yeah, I think it probably was.
For anyone who doesn't know, Robin has got an incredible memory for songs and chords and lyrics. So you can hear something once, maybe twice, and just. You've got it. It's there. And for me, with Christmas songs, with covers, I have to work a lot harder to get them. And the problem with covers is that everyone knows the word. So you sing it wrong, everyone's like, they all know. So I have to say, I've leaned on you a few times, this superpower that you have. So always grateful that you've
often
been able to pull something out of the bag and make it sound
often
good.
In the moment as well. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, Robin, you sing.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. On the spot. I tell you what, I think one awkward thing that I can remember is the feeling of you've just been out for a nice big breakfast at like 11 o'clock and then Josh says, oh, we've been invited for lunch at 12. And then you go to the place and they want to get that because they're being really hospitable. The whole menu, and it's like a table full of food.
Oh man, yeah.
You're there thinking, I've just finished breakfast.
And then Josh says, by the way, we've been invited for dinner at 5.
Yeah, had that happen a few times.
And we met someone for coffee and cake at 3. And then we're going out for to a night market at 7.
I think one of my favourite meals ever, in terms of, you know, the three of us and an after party, was the one where we were in mainland China and that Hong Kong band Supper Moment were playing, and true to their name, they invited us to the after show party, and it was like 1 a.m. or 2 a.m. and we were umming and ahhing, weren't we? Do we go, do we not go? It's pretty late, we've got to get, you know, have an early start the next morning traveling to the next city. And we thought, yeah, let's go for it, let's do it. You know, they were great guys and it'd be nice to spend some time hanging out with them. And just getting there, and you know, they'd ordered some food, and you know, the party was already in full swing, and the drummer just looking through the menu and going, I'll have one of everything in the menu. And I thought it was one of the most rock and roll moments that we've experienced.
It was just a big old table, wasn't it? Like a long, long table. Probably like, what, 20 or 30 people sat around it. I don't know, maybe less. But and then it was just full of food. Like, and then the food just kept coming.
And we'd already had dinner as well, hadn't we?
Yeah. Although I think like at that point, you know, I can always do a midnight snack. I've always got room for that after a gig.
No, that's brilliant. I think one of the, when I talk about awkward things, one awkward thing, because I was always throwing myself into situations, was when we went to a friend's house for dinner and their family had spent the whole day cooking food for us. And the grandfather stood up to toast me with his glass, and I couldn't understand a word he said, and all I knew how to say was shishir. And so he leaned the cup over to me, and I thought he was giving it to me, but he was doing a toast. So I took the cup from him and said, "Shishir." And everyone just burst out laughing, and the poor grandfather was shocked as anything. Why is this foreigner taking my cup and drunk it?
That's pretty rock and roll. That's like, yeah, British rock and roll style.
Would you like to head back to Taiwan anytime?
Oh, I'd love to. Yeah, so I haven't actually been since 2017, I think, December 2017.
Wow, okay. Yeah.
So it's been a while now, and I'd love to go back. I keep trying to think if there's ways to make that happen, or, you know, I'd love to go back and do some recording again. Or,
yeah,
we'll see. You never know, do you?
That's right.
What's in store?
Well, that's right. And for listeners who are thinking they would love to go to Taiwan as well, there is still a song competition that is open, running till September the 30th. All you need to do is be a UK resident over 18 years old. Write a song that relates to Taiwan some way. Include 3 words of Mandarin in it. And a little hint, Taiwan counts as 2 words of Mandarin. So you've got 2 right there. Enter the song. And actually, the first prize is 2 free tickets with Eva Air to go from London to Taipei return. So music can take you places. Absolutely. And this is certainly an opportunity that that we're really happy to be able to offer to other people, because nobody gave us any free tickets to go to Taiwan. So you know, this is the chance for people. Yeah. And if you come second, then you get a Giant bike, as in the brand from Taiwan, Giant.
Wow.
Which is also really good, actually. I've got a Giant bike and it's fantastic.
Wow. So,
and other prizes include lots of Taiwanese food and snacks. So, you know, there's a good chance of winning something Taiwanese. Great. If you're not a musician, grab a musician friend. Enter the song competition and there could be Taiwanese treats coming your way.
Oh, that's fantastic. I think just to finish with a final question, maybe if you've got another one, Josh. Robin, any places that are particularly special to you in Taiwan and that you would recommend other people to kind of go to?
So many. Yeah, I think... And I'm not great with names. So I think for me, I really enjoyed going to some of the night markets. There was one in particular that me and Josh went to with Jimmy and Christy. It's out of Taipei. I can't remember.
Yeah, I think that was the Geelong night market, Geelong Yeshu, which is a huge one. Yeah, absolutely massive.
Yeah, it's massive. Absolutely packed. Just amazing. I really enjoyed going to the beach a few times. I think... definitely did my first ever surfing at Yilan with Kenny and Linda. That was really fun. And stunning beach, like really warm water, looking out at, is it Turtle Island in the bay there?
Yes.
I really, really loved going up in the mountains. Elephant Mountain, going up to the high tea places there.
Mao Kong.
Yeah. And then just being, Kaohsiung as well. Got a shout out, Kaohsiung. Really cool town.
Yeah, great place.
But yeah, just like, I think for me, as like when I travel to lots of places, it's just so different from my home environment that I'm just buzzed to be anywhere. And at like so many amazing little coffee shops and bars and people's houses that we ended up in, I think they're like, there's some really nice style in Taiwan, some great like interior design, and yeah, it's just a really fun, exciting place to be.
Well, thank you so much for sharing your thoughts and some of your experiences and some of your music. We're obviously big fans. And look forward to some of your new releases.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me. And thanks for taking me to Taiwan.
No, I hope there's another chance to again soon.
Yeah, me too.
Brilliant. Thanks, Robin. Speak to you soon.
Thank you.
Bye.
Cheers.